evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, September 26th, 2019. The UK's ambassador to South Sudan says new instruments are being employed to ensure that South Sudan's resources are not looted again for personal gain.
The revenue from oil, the revenue from teak, the revenue from any other of the South Sudan's many natural resources, that revenue is being used to support the peace process.
And we take a closer look at the profiteers of South Sudan's civil war.
China Master Petroleum Corporation, Sinopec, and Petronas from Malaysia. And they are all complicit here. These multinational companies are not just passive beneficiaries of a horrific status quo. They have actively participated in the destruction of the country.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The British ambassador to South Sudan says the international community is using different tools to make sure that the parties to South Sudan's revitalized peace agreement do not take the country back into war. For VOA, Manyang David Mayar has the story from Bor.
In an exclusive interview with South Sudan in Focus, British Ambassador Chris Todd says, aside from enforcing sanctions and an arms embargo on South Sudan, the international community will work with regional leaders to prevent illicit financial flows of money in and out of South Sudan.
The international community needs to try to ensure that the resources of this country are being invested in the future of this country, that the revenue from oil, the revenue from teak, the revenue from any other of the South Sudan's many natural resources, that revenue is being used to support the peace process. So one of the things that we're also trying to do is to work with the region to ensure that illicit financial flows are stopped, that it is no longer possible for anyone to profit from conflict and basically take the money out of the country.
A report published by the Centenary last week entitled The Taking of South Sudan reveals that the war enabled certain high-ranking South Sudanese officials, members of their families, and international players from the U.S., the U.K., and other countries to loot billions of dollars from the country. The Centenary report recommends that the U.S., the European Union, Australia, and Canada investigate and, if appropriate, sanction the individuals and entities named in the report. It also advises banks and governments to act to, quote, prevent the purchases of luxury real estate by South Sudanese elites and their international enablers, end quote. Trott says, he understands that South Sudan is a sovereign country, but adds top government officials must demonstrate this sovereignty by responsibly using the country's resources to deliver services to the citizens rather than enriching themselves.
The government likes to talk about sovereignty. For me, sovereignty is about providing services to your people, and you need to therefore translate sovereignty into services. What I'm really hoping to see with the arrival of this new transitional government, which is more inclusive, is an opportunity for us to strengthen our partnership at a national level and at a state level to ensure that the needs of the South Sudanese people are put top.
With less than 2 months to go to form a unity government by November 12th, Trott says South Sudan's neighbors should actively engage in South Sudan's peace process so that the parties to the peace deal do not let the country slip back into war.
I think that it would be very difficult for the parties to return to conflict if none of their neighbors, none of South Sudan's neighbors, are helping them. I think it would be very difficult for the parties to return to conflict because I think the agreement that was reached in September last year was owned by many more people than just the key parties. So there is pressure from outside and there's pressure from inside to ensure that the parties stick to the agreement.
Trott was in Bor for the past 2 days to assess the progress of the UK-funded projects in Jonglei State, including Girls Education South Sudan, and a peace-building project being implemented by the NGO Catholic Relief Services. The project entails helping communities in conflict to identify and utilize non-violent options to resolve their problems and address their challenges peacefully. For VOA News, I am Anyang David Mayar in Bor.
That Century investigation found that the international community must do more to tackle networks of global corruption that fuel the violence in South Sudan. It detailed how corporations profited from the country's civil war. The investigation by the Century, co-founded by actor George Clooney, exposed the links between armed groups, global oil giants, and British and American citizens in the civil war, as we hear from Henry Ridgewell in London, where the report's findings were released last week.
May 2013 in Upper Nile State, South Sudan. Celebrations are staged to mark the reopening of the Palluj oil field. Government ministers pose alongside Chinese workers and executives from Dar Petroleum as the oil pumps are switched on in the world's youngest nation. Just months later, a brutal civil war erupts, killing hundreds of thousands of people. At a news conference last week in London, the Century Group outlined how Dar Petroleum played a central role in the conflict. John Prendergast is the group's co-founder.
Dar Petroleum is owned by some of the biggest and most powerful companies in the world: China National Petroleum Corporation, Sinopec, and Petronas from Malaysia. And they are all complicit here. These multinational companies are not just passive beneficiaries of a horrific status quo. They have actively participated in the destruction of the country. They've supported deadly militias, they've seriously polluted the environment, and they've paid off government officials along the way.
China National Petroleum Corporation and Sinopec could not be reached for comment. Petronas has not yet responded to VOA inquiries. South Sudan was plunged into war in December 2013 when President Salva Kiir accused Vice President Riek Machar of plotting a coup. Century co-founder George Clooney says the conflict was fueled by global corruption.
They received money, oil, transportation, and weapons from a vast array of people and corporations all over the world who have profited from this crisis.
The Century's Deborah Laprevot outlined how corruption drove the civil war.
A company owned by President Kiir's 20-year-old daughter and her foreign business partners obtained a mining license in a territory in which the government's military, which are under the control of her father, President Kiir, later drove thousands of people from their homes.
Corruption is part of the system across the region, says analyst Rachel Ebreck of the University of London, author of the book South Sudan's Injustice System.
People were engaged in accumulating political budgets in order to reward their followers, and that these political budgets were very often dependent on behind-the-scenes deals. So it's not to be seen simply as an individualized activity, but rather as part of a system.
The Century report says two British citizens formed an oil company with a general who is accused of forcibly recruiting child soldiers, and details how Ara Dolarian, an American arms dealer, allegedly tried to sell $43 million worth of weapons to rebel South Sudanese general Paul Malong. Those exposing corruption can pay the ultimate price. Lawyer and activist Dong Samuel Luak was detained in Kenya in 2013 and murdered in South Sudan. He had worked with the Century investigation. Again, Rachel Ibrek.
We can see, you know, what the level of pressure is on those people who try to stand up against this system, but we can also see how important they have been in this kind of activity of trying to expose what's going on.
The Century is calling on the international community to impose sanctions on the networks of corrupt and criminal activities that have fueled the violence. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The children's agency UNICEF in South Sudan has received more than $17 million from the Africa Development Bank to enhance teaching and learning for some of the most marginalized children in the country. The bank's country manager for South Sudan says the donation also will go toward training teachers. Viola Elias has more for VOA from Juba.
Benedict Sori Kano, the African Development Bank country's manager for South Sudan, says his bank is committed to helping South Sudan people achieve sustainable development by improving access to education.
Today's event is yet another testimony of the African Development Bank's growing commitment to work closely with the government of the Republic of South Sudan, a valued shareholder of the bank, and our other partners to assist in improving access and quality of basic education in the country. The African Development Bank's support through the Improving Access and Quality of Basic Education project, a grant of $17.7 million.
Kano says the grant will fund the project activities for 4 years. He says training primary school teachers is an important part of improving the country's quality of education because primary teachers are the foundation of learning. Chepto Amos, executive director of the African Development Bank in South Sudan, says the bank wants to increase its role in the country's development.
This project was strongly endorsed by the board of the bank, and this is a demonstration of the support the international community has for South Sudan.
UNICEF country representative for South Sudan, Muhammad Oyoga, who signed the grant agreement on behalf of the children agency, says the money will also ensure that 2.2 million children who are not attending classes can return to the school. Oyoga says the project will train 2,000 teachers and improve access to primary education for about 30,000 boys and girls in the former states of Upper Nile, Unity, Jonglei, and Eastern Equatoria.
What we are aiming to do together with the bank and the government of South Sudan is to make sure that we increase not only access to education in this country, but we also increase the quality of that education. And we are really extremely happy to see that one of the major focus of this project is on teachers, because as you know, without teachers, there is no education.
Faisal Samuel teaches primary 8 at the YMCA primary school in Juba. Samuel says training teachers will increase the number of qualified teachers in South Sudan.
The teachers who are in this school are not qualified, just few whom are qualified that can deliver services. And we need young trainings. We need trainings in order to assist us in order for us to improve the quality of the learners.
Samuel says he personally knows many people who have left teaching profession to work for non-governmental organizations that pays better salaries. The African Development Bank began operating in South Sudan in 2012 and has funded more than a dozen projects, including humanitarian programs. The African Development Bank contributed 95,000 metric tons of food to be distributed by WFP last year. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A SPLM North member says the people of Nuba Mountains and Darfur deserve government compensation. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what plant is the most useful for your family in your garden?
Onions are the most used plant in our garden because in everything that we cook, we add onion. Yeah, I think that one is the answer. Onions and tomatoes.
The plant that is most useful for my family, I think it's ginger, because it's very useful to the family because we think it's medicinal and you use it to as a spice as well to prepare your food.
The most useful plant in our garden is groundnut, because one, it can be harvested earlier than any other crop in the garden.
In my family, we cherish bitter leaf. We call it onugu in our dialect. That's Igbo, precisely. Well, it's a delicacy.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A member of the Sudan
Sudan People's Liberation Movement North says the new government in Sudan should compensate the people of Nuba Mountains and Darfur for war-related damages. Hassan Sharif Ali says the Nuba Mountains area has been destroyed by the government's military campaign to defeat rebels operating in the two areas. Sharif says there will be no peace in Sudan if the people of Darfur and the Nuba Mountains are not compensated for the crimes committed against them.
Justice for us of all, and we have, you know, the compensation for the war areas. People have lost their wealth, they have lost their houses, and the common things also, like the hospitals and the schools has been ruined, and even the religion places like the mosques, the churches, everything, you know, have been destroyed at that area. We need a big compensation for this one. The second thing we need...
But who is to pay for those damages that you are counting? Who is to pay compensation?
Compensation to be paid by the government of Sudan. Yeah, because this is the result of the war, you know. And they started the war, not us. So we need them to pay for that. And the second thing, we need a self-rule at least. This is the least one. If not, we're going to go to independent.
What is your idea of a self-rule? Self-rule for who? I mean, who needs that?
We need self-rule for all Sudan nations. Whoever wants to rule himself in his area, and we make like a confederation company.
Confederal system.
Yeah, it's okay. But to go to the central system like before, it's not going to work with us.
Why?
Because always we have been in this like 6 years old since the independence of Sudan till now. The same role is playing in Sudan. Any government which is coming, which is military government or a democratic government, they were playing the same role, and the wealth and the power was always concentrated in the north area of Sudan.
And this is a different take that you have from what I hear from a lot of Sudanese. They are saying a new era has come, yeah, where people can build Sudan on a new page. But you're saying, no, we need something more than that. Why would you take a different angle? One would say you're one among a million.
Yeah, actually, what I'm taking, because during the, you know, this experience of the rules within the 60 years in Sudan, they were not fulfilling any kind of promises. And that's why I'm looking these things, you know, in that way, you know. We are not going to let our army, you know, to be just disarmed, because this is our power, you know, unless they agree with the points we need.
You're talking about the Nuba Mountains.
Nuba Mountains and Blue Nile. And even Darfur. Darfur also, they are taking the same within the party of Abdul Wahid Muhammad.
So the people in Sudan are celebrating peace, but you are talking war. Is that what you are telling me?
Actually, I'm not talking about war, but I'm talking about a gentleman agreement to be held. Okay? So what's going to be, we are waiting for the new government. And what they offer, from there we can go. That's what I'm saying. The new government, if they offer a good offer for us, like in the SPLA, and we agreed on that, peace will prevail. Otherwise, if we don't agree, we are still having our weapon, we are still having our soldiers, and we are still having our party, and we're going to struggle until we get our demands.
But you're telling me that you are still watching them. If they don't agree with your demands, you have your army, you have your people, you will go back to war. That's
yeah,
what you
because,
say.
Yeah, you know, why I'm saying that? Because since the beginning, when they came, you know, like to agree with the parties, to make to negotiate.
Mm-hmm. During the negotiations?
Yeah, before that. Mm-hmm. You know, we as SPLA, SPLM, we talked to them, and we didn't agree. That's why we are not part of this agreement, you know. This is a sign, you know, that they don't agree what we want.
That is Hassan Sharif Ali, a member of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement North. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Kitchener, Canada. A report sent to the United Nations Human Rights Council is urging Sudan's transitional government to adopt a human rights-based approach in its pursuit of economic development and stability for the country. Lisa Schlein has the story for VOA from Geneva.
This is the first report by the UN independent expert on Sudan that looks at the human rights situation since protests erupted late last year, leading to the overthrow of longtime President Omar al-Bashir in April. Aristide Nononsi commends the Sudanese military and opposition for signing an agreement on the transfer of power to civilian rule. He says that is a critical step to delivering peace and security for the Sudanese people. Nononsi says the pursuit of human rights is key to overcoming the profound economic crisis, poverty, and inequalities in Sudan. The constitutional declaration signed by the parties envisages the formation of independent commissions to investigate recent and past violations. Nononsi says those bodies must be independent and impartial and must carry out their investigations promptly.
Lessons learned from other countries have shown that investigative commissions can contribute to transitional societies, such as the Sudanese society, in assessing truth about human rights violations, ensuring accountability, serving justice, and achieving guarantee of non-recurrence or non-repetition.
Nononsi says accountability is a critical element to combating violence and preventing a recurrence of violations in the future. Sudan's Minister of Justice, Nasreddin Abdulbari, says he has taken note of the independent expert's observations. He says his government is taking measures to address shortcomings and deficiencies in Sudan's human rights system.
The Prime Minister has issued a decision establishing a national independent commission. As you have mentioned, this commission will investigate the violations and abuses committed against demonstrators since the onset of protests against the former regime until the brutal riot in June on a pro-change, pro-democracy sit-in.
Abdulbari says his government has taken other significant steps. To ensure women's participation, he says four women have been appointed as ministers, and women will compose at least 40% of the Legislative Council. He says significant steps are being taken to end restrictions on the rights of freedom of expression, organization, and peaceful assembly. He says the state of emergency will be abolished, and political detainees are being released. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A landslide at an illegal gold mine in Chad has killed about 30 people, including Sudanese refugees, according to a government minister. The mine in the Tibesti region near the Libyan border collapsed early Tuesday. Defense Minister Mahmoud Salah told Reuters that more victims might still be buried in the rubble. There's been a steep uptick in illegal mining in Tibesti in recent years, often by refugees from Sudan looking for quick money to travel to Europe, or by rebels who had been fighting the Sudanese army. A delegation from the DR Congo has been holding bilateral talks with Rwanda's Demobilization Commission on accelerating joint efforts to eradicate rebel forces operating in the DRC. They include the FDLR group, made up largely of those who killed Tutsi and moderate Hutu in Rwanda's genocide over 15 years ago. The meeting comes just after the death of the FDLR leader, who was killed last week by DRC forces. Eugene Uwimani has the details from Kigali.
The men in the room are discussing ways of permanently disarming over 100 rebels operating in the forests of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Among the deadly group is the FDLR, whose members fled Rwanda after committing genocide mainly against Tutsi in 1994. Last week, DRC forces killed Lieutenant General Mudachuma Sylvestre, the leader of FDLR. For Rwanda, this was an important goal. Serafine Mukantabana is the chairperson of Rwanda Demobilization Commission. She says his death encourages us. We have seen that with the DRC, those militants who are reluctant to obey our calls for peace can still be punished in other ways. The success of the new initiatives may lie with the growing cooperation between Rwanda and DRC, in particular new initiatives by DRC's President Felix Tshisekedi. Clovis Munire is the coordinator of DRC's Demobilization Commission. He says Felix Tshisekedi has a vision. The rebels concern us all. We have been living with them for more than 25 years. We know how much we miss our peaceful country. So we must fight them together. Hopes are high that Rwanda and DRC can defeat the rebels. President Paul Kagame has pledged military support.
We will join yesterday. So we have no. We've been waiting. And I am glad that we have a person there saying he wants to work with the neighbors to get rid of this problem. Because this problem has been there for too long. And it affects the Congo, it affects the neighbors, it affects all of us. So there is no point in sitting with that problem or allowing that problem to stand in the way of the progress we should be making.
The DRC counts over 100 rebel groups operating in its forest. The Rwandan government so far has received and demobilized 12,000 former militants. However, some rebel groups are still operating to destabilize Congo. The World Health Organization says there have been 130 attacks on health facilities between January and mid-May 2019, resulting in 4 deaths and injuring 38. The assaults may have also contributed to the spread of Ebola. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Bifula by Chameleon. We've been listening to Chameleon with the song Bifula. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and we're glad you could be here with us. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.